You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King locked on trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Raining Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from The Athletic, here on my roof deck with Sam Jam Packard, the great, formerly of WEEI. We're staring out at the south end of Boston, enjoying a decent day, I guess. It's not like a beautiful day. It's
could
a
use
little,
more sun.
A little muggy, a little cloudy, but We can deal with the warm weather.
We're here outside with a few beverages. I think we're doing quite nicely.
We're going to be all right. So, obviously, we're going to be talking about the Eastern Conference Finals. Celtics up 2-0. I don't think too many people expected that. But these Celtics just keep defending, just keep being ballsy, fearless dudes, no matter who they're playing against. LeBron had 42, 12, and 10.
There you go.
And they still overcame him. Incredible? Yes. Surprising? Yes.
Yes.
But it's 2-0 Celtics. So let's talk about what Cleveland has to do to get back in this series.
That's what I was trying to figure out after game two, because LeBron turns in a 40-point triple-double. And they still lose by 13. And I was like, I declared the Bucks dead after the Celtics went up 2-0. I'm trying to avoid that. I'm trying not to be hasty. I've been trying to think of, like, what is the, like, the Cavs can make adjustments. I imagine the Celtics are not going to shoot as well.
The Celtics didn't shoot that well.
That's the thing, though. Is
they
that
missed
the,
a lot of open
Celtics
shots,
won,
especially in the first half.
The Celtics won that game based on defense and just like completely shutting the Cavs down. The Celtics actually, the start of the fourth quarter was terrible.
Terrible.
There was,
they missed everything.
They were up by 9, or they were actually up 11, I think, and had missed 4 or 5 consecutive possessions, and it was just really bad. Like, the Celtics weren't great on offense, but you get the performance from LeBron, you get Kyle Korver making shots on the outside, you get a decent game from Kevin Love, and you still lose by 13. What's the solution? Like,
I think the solution is probably defend.
But that one is that something they can
defend.
Do?
Now, whether they can do that, I'm not sure. Another thing, like, J.R. Smith has been bad. J.R. Smith, if he hits shots, it's a different series so far. Like, J.R. can get hot. J.R. can get smoking hot.
Anytime. That's the beauty of J.R. is that anytime
I feel like he's kind of like their Mook in some ways.
There's a lot of similarities between JR and Mook.
JR and Mook. I mean, the one similarity I'm talking about is the fact that they can give you a whole lot offensively, or sometimes they take
can
away
you
from
team.
You a little bit yeah. offensively. So that's one thing. But the Celtics have done a great job throughout the playoffs of taking away surrounding three-point shooters. And obviously Korver got free for a little while. But when you think back to Redick and Bellinelli, and you think back to, I guess, the Bucks didn't really have any surrounding
didn't have
three-point,
any three-point shooters.
Because their only one was Chris Middleton.
And he doesn't like to take threes.
Yeah.
Unless forced into it.
But the Celtics, I mean, throughout the season even, they've been done a great
throughout
job.
Throughout the past, like, 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's a Brad staple.
That's a Brad staple. So the Celtics needed to continue taking away the three-point arc. They need to stay attached to Korver as much as possible.
It seemed like they figured him out in the second half, because they were trying. There were some points in the first half where Korver was getting he has such a quick release that he doesn't need that much space, but it feel like he was not like less willing to take those shots just because someone was in his hip coming around those screens.
Yeah, they did a much better job on him in the second half of game two. It's weird to see a Cavaliers team struggle so badly to score and generate good looks. Like, we're used to the Cavaliers in the playoffs just running through people. And I know they ran through the Raptors, the poor Raptors who have been
such a sad existence.
Slapped around by LeBron since they were children. I guess they still are children.
They have yet to grow up because
Toronto.
LeBron has not let them grow up.
I feel bad cracking jokes at the Raptors' expense because they had a great season. They did have a great season. And
they tweeted out congrats to
Dwayne Casey
for being Coach of the Year finalist.
Yeah, that one.
Congrats, Coach.
Just fired you, but good for you, man.
Congrats on the nomination. Glad to be here.
What was I just
talking about? Cavs offense is struggling to score. And the thing, I think LeBron has to have, like, he had an amazing first quarter. And that was like 21 points is pretty good. It feels like he needs to do that for an entire game. And I just don't know. Like, does LeBron have to score 50 for the Cavs to win? Where are they getting, let's just say the Celtics score 100 to 110 points. We'll give LeBron 40. Where are the 60 other points coming from? You're going to get 20, maybe 20 from Kevin Love, but like, the other players
related. That trade deadline that they had has produced nothing for them. Nothing. Jordan Clarkson wasn't even in the rotation game two.
DMP.
Larry Nance, DMP in game one, did nothing in game two. Rodney Hood quit on his team in the first round.
I thought Rodney Hood was pretty was decent in game one.
He was pretty good at getting fine enough.
Like, I mean, he did more than I was expecting Rodney Hood to do. He was decent.
They were widely applauded for what they did at the trade deadline.
When the Kyrie trade happened, they were widely applauded for fleecing the Celtics. So, like,
I don't know if they were widely applauded for fleecing the Celtics. I actually thought the Cavaliers might get the better of that trade. But obviously, I didn't know Isaiah was going to be totally diminished by the hip and ultimately need surgery.
And I think Jay Crowder just hated LeBron and could never get over it. Like, he had been
That's a wild claim.
Can you explain why Jay Crowder didn't work out?
Because they don't have a system. They don't play real basketball.
Well, yeah, that's a decent response.
and to an extent, you have.
But they could use a Jay Crowder in this series. Some guy would be a willing defender. How many defenders do they have? How many guys do you think are jumping on the floor? It just seems like they're I really don't want to say effort because they're professional basketball players and I'm fucking jam. I don't want to question their
jam.
I don't want to question their effort, but their rotations are lazy. There's so many wide open shots the Celtics get. They left Rozier open seven times in the first half and he didn't make any of the shots, and you knew you can't leave Tito open that often. He's going to knock it down. There's just so many times where it just feels like the Celtics have to do make two passes and they have wide open shots.
Yeah, and the Cavs, they didn't stop the Raptors.
No, but they just scored
The Raptors
did not stop the Cavs.
And through two games, Cavaliers offense, 93.0 points per 100 possession, which is disgusting. That is just utterly disgusting. Jam is struggling with his microphone right now.
I got it. We back.
We Gucci. But yeah, they just haven't been able to find anything easy. One of the strategies in game two that really stuck out to me, it was just kind of wild, but at the same time made perfect sense. Marcus Smart on Tristan Thompson. I deeply, deeply enjoyed Brad Stevens being like, you know what? That big dude who has demoralized us on the glass for years and years and always seems to ruin us, let's just throw our point guard at him because he's Marcus Smart, and that's just kind of what we do. And it worked, and the Celtics were able to stay small, and the Cavs at some points were having Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson guarding Marcus Smart. That wasn't going to work out.
That was an impressive thing I thought about the game plan, or just I think an impressive thing about the Celtics is their versatility, because they had the small lineups, which you highlighted in your article on The Athletic, but they also had some big lineups with Marcus Morris at the three. Like, they have the kind of ability and the versatility, which I think plays into what Brad wants to do, to play big and throw Aaron Baines out there, put Marcus Morris at the three, or they can do those things and go small. And they're pretty successful no matter who's out there, who's on the court. There's not a lot of drop-off. And I think a lot of that has to do with shortening the rotation. We're not seeing, like, those terrible second quarters or, like, they're just playing with, like, a lot of more talent, and there's just, no matter who they put out there, whether they go big with Baines or smaller with, like, putting Smart on Tristan Thompson, it just works for the Celtics because it feels like everyone's locked in.
Everyone's locked in. I think one big piece in it is that they have all two-way players. Like, with the exception of Greg Monroe when he plays spot minutes.
He got way too many minutes in game two.
They were playing zone so that they could have Greg Monroe on the court.
He got, like, it's just ridiculous that there were situations where LeBron was going one-on-one against Greg Monroe.
Yeah, that one.
Not ideal.
That matchup worked out exactly how you thought it was going to.
And LeBron and Moose, like, trying to dunk. Like,
yeah.
There was a point in Greg Monroe's career where he would have dunked that, but I've never seen a guy. It feels like every time Greg Monroe, you think he's going to dunk it, he gets blocked.
He wasn't moving too quickly there.
He doesn't move quickly left to right or up and down.
Great hands, though.
Great hands. Fantastic, like,
hands. He comes up with...
Willing passer.
He comes up with more steals than I ever thought Greg Monroe would get. He just kind of... His mitts are just always in the right place. Can't always move his feet as well as he should. But outside of him, everybody in the rotation is a two-way player. And I think that puts a lot of teams in a bind because other teams have to make decisions, right? Like, you have
Korver.
To decide.
Korver's like the best example.
Korver's the best example. You have to decide, are we going to go with shooting or are we going to go with defense? Are we going to go with size or are we going to go with speed? And then the Celtics just have, like, a bunch of guys who are 6'7 to 6'9 or Marcus Smart, who's 6'4 but plays 6'9. And they can switch every position. And at the other end, they can all do things. And so you can switch lineups and without losing things. Like, you can add more shooting without losing too much defense. So I think that's been a big deal for them. Like, other teams, other coaches have had to decide, okay, I'm going to go with Matthew Dellavedova here and our offense is going to plummet. Or I'm going to go with, you know, Marco Bellinelli, but they're going to target him every time. Whereas the Celtics, they can change up lineups, and there's still no one you can really target unless you have LeBron and, like, they switch Terry Rozier on him one of the few times that they did. Like, there's just no one to really target.
There's definitely no defensive weak link.
Yeah. If
it's like Terry maybe guarding LeBron. But I thought in the moments where they tried to do the switches, Terry did a pretty good job of fronting and just being physical and making the entry pass difficult. There's no, like, defensive liabilities. And the offense doesn't take a huge hit when you bring in Baines. Like, Baines is still productive enough.
Now that he's launching three balls.
Above the break three from Baines is not something I was prepared for. But he took it with confidence. Ben Simmons is a coward, but he took it with confidence. And, like, that's important. But he's not, like, you would expect some sort of drop-off just with, like, less spacing. But Baines is productive enough. And there's no real weak link here for the Celtics. So I'm not going to declare the Cavs dead, but, like, so...
You can't declare him dead with LeBron.
Because LeBron could come out and do his first quarter for the entire game. Like, if LeBron scored 70 points, would I be shocked? Yes, because that would be amazing. But 60 points? No, like, not really. I think that's, like, what the Cavs need to do for them to win a game. Like, what... Say the Cavs come out and win game three. What has happened? Is it the Celtics just have completely gone cold from, like, shooting? Like, where... Because we'd mentioned before, the Celtics' offense wasn't that great in Game 2.
Yeah.
And the Cavs' defense is so bad. Like, they just don't... three passes, and then they're done.
Their defense has been so bad, I'm going back to the Raptors. That you just wonder how the hell the Raptors didn't win a game. How the hell did you get swept out of this team that cannot guard a soul?
Well, because DeRozan can't play defense. Like, the Raptors don't have those two-way players that... The Celtics do. Like, their main star, they were in the Cavs were targeting DeRozan every single, like, most of the time he's on the court. There's no one you target on the Celtics. Like, yeah, if you want to try and switch and get Terry, like, LeBron and Terry Rozier, that's not, like, it's, I think, clearly that's an advantage for the Cavs, but that's not, like, you're not going to sustain that for a whole game. Because the Celtics, if they're really getting burned by that, they just bring in Smart as the point guard, and then they basically have a lineup they can switch 1 through 5, and there's no like available easy target for the Cavs. Like I'm about to declare him dead. I feel like are the Cavs dead? Like I don't know.
Here's the thing: they're going back to Cleveland. They're going to have home court. They have LeBron James. They have shooters who haven't gone untracked yet, but can. And
but it's like JR is missing open shots. Like they're not getting. The Celtics are doing a damn good job of running them off the 3-point line. So I don't know if it's like really slowing the game down and making it like a bully in the post game. Like if you just make LeBron become a post up, LeBron can get to the basket anytime he wants. And if he's like willing to just be play bully ball for 48 minutes and they really like muck up the game, then I think there's a chance. But I don't know.
I also think foul trouble looms as a big threat to the Celtics.
That's the strategy if I'm the Cavs, is that you're really trying to get just basically everyone. You just constantly feed LeBron in the post. It's going to lead to good like points and it's going to lead to foul trouble. And so if you can cut down the rotation, if you can get Tatum out of there or get Jaylen Brown out of there.
Or Marcus Morris.
Or Marcus Morris. Any of those guys, if you get them in foul trouble.
Yeah, because they're so thin right now.
I'm assuming Scott Foster or Tony Brothers is going to ref game 3.
The Celtics, they're essentially, what, 3 deep off the bench?
2.5. I mean, like, semi, like, I guess.
Semi can play LeBron minutes at least.
He can give you 6 fouls.
But
they're going to call him on him.
But if they go any deeper than that, then you've got problems. Because Greg Monroe, I think, especially if LeBron's on the court, he's a real issue defensively. When LeBron's not on the court, I think they can get away with Monroe minutes because no one else tests you.
Like, well, I mean, the Cavs are also not that deep. Like, who's on the Cavs bench that you is like good?
Yeah, and it's like that's what I'm saying. They don't have anyone to challenge you in pick and roll. Not a single person. Like
Jordan Clarkson thinks he can.
He does.
Got the confidence. I admire.
But he's
got
to be on the court. He's got to be on the court.
I admire Jordan Clarkson's confidence. That's the thing. Is this. Where do you turn to if you're the Cavs?
Thon Maker. The Thon Maker curveball.
Thon Maker curveball.
Everybody knows the Thon Maker curveball is the way to switch
the series.
That's how you get the series.
Yeah. Like, what random injury will benefit the Cavs? They're dead. There.
Oh, he's done it. He has declared them dead.
This has not worked out historically.
I want to let it be known that I have not declared them dead. Because last time, you looped me in and pretended like I had declared the Bucks dead as well.
Well, I was just being a provocateur. I was trying to get the listeners.
I like the provocateur?
Provocation? Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah.
that's basically my role here.
I appreciate the provocation. I have not yet declared the Cavaliers dead. I do think, though, that they're very aware that this Celtics team is good and a problem.
The Celtics team's not only good, but they're unrelenting. Like, there's no quit, and they're going to be playing their asses off for 48 minutes just because I feel like that's the culture that's been developed, and if you're not doing that, Brad will yank your ass from the game. Like, I was reading some article about Shane Larkin, and it was like I think it was like the 4th game of the season, and he didn't dive on the ground for a loose ball.
I think that was Zach Lowe's piece.
Yeah. It was talking about their toughness, yeah. And it's like, That rings true as a Celtics fan. I was just like watching their games, and that's part of the reasons they've been in so many comebacks. Is like they're going to play their asses off no matter what the situation is, and that counts for something in a time like when watching the Cavs, where I think I saw Sam Decker tweeted about this. It was like there's some possessions where it's just obvious they're not trying.
Yeah,
and it's like that. This is
Jeff Green committed a turnover. And didn't even consider getting back on defense. Now LeBron had a chase down block of Terry Rozier on that possession, but Jeff Green literally committed a turnover, hung his head, and stayed at the opposite foul.
I'm shocked that Jeff Green hung his head. It was a little bit sad.
I thought, and then later when I think Horford chased down an offensive rebound in the fourth quarter and then passed it to Terry Rozier, who cut by Jeff Green. And LeBron just kind of looked at Jeff Green like
LeBron
this
was
guy.
Giving a lot of looks out. After the JR just garbage foul on Horford, both LeBron and Kevin Love just like looked at JR like, really, man? Really?
That was,
we got to wear the same uniform as you?
That was, pulling this bold nonsense right now. That was a dirty foul, especially. And this is not, obviously, JR was not thinking about this at the time. I don't think he was thinking about much at the time. But we got a lot of sirens out here. A lot of sirens out here
that's
in the South
that's
End.
That's life in the South End, man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Sirens and boutique clothing shops.
But.
Oh, we got helicopters, too. D-Tex trying to come down on Jay King's home.
What the hell was I talking about?
Green being a
scrub? No.
Al Horford getting a rebound? J.R. Smith. J.R.
J.R. So J.R. wasn't thinking about this when he shoved Al Horford. But to do that against the team that saw Gordon Hayward snap his ankle, you know, like that, that adds another level to it because both those teams saw that. The first game of the season, both those teams saw how dangerous a mid-air fall can be. And JR's like, you know what? I'm still going to shove this guy in the back. That was a Bush League move.
I do respect JR for admitting as much in the postgame. He's like, yeah, that's a dirty play. I should have been called for a flagrant. I was just trying to not have him on the score. I was like, all right, JR, I respect the honesty. After game one, too, he was pretty honest. He's like, these Celtics are different.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're not ready for these.
Yeah, he said they were different than the Pacers. The game one blowout was different. But I think another comment that stood out, the Kevin Love comment, where he came out and said, yeah, we can learn from these Celtics.
It's about effort, though. That's like directly points to effort and trying.
It felt like he was sub-tweeting his teammates and his coaching staff.
Which is a nice twist because that's a LeBron move. He learned from LeBron how to sub-tweet.
But also, you've been to 3 straight finals. You are an NBA champion. You're a...
You came back from 3-1 against the
Warriors. Many time All-Star. Like, you've accomplished all this, and you're looking at these 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds and being like, we need to learn from those rookies.
Look at those guys. They're trying.
That was the craziest comment to me. Like, it's one thing to get beaten by the Celtics. And who says that? Have you ever heard a player in the middle of a playoff series say, yeah, we can learn from those guys who just whipped our ass? No.
Well, that's the quote of a guy who just got his ass whipped for two games and is based on...
Imagine if the Celtics had been like, you know what, we can learn from that Thon Maker, dude. We can really learn from him.
Like, well, no, but I feel like that directly points to effort and intensity and physicality and gooning up the game. Shouts to Chris Sale, by the way, for wearing yesterday, like, a Celtics Goon Squad t-shirt.
He must have had it before, right?
You
think he got it printed
I think the t-shirt makers, I think Sully's brand sent a whole bunch of them. Ooh. I don't know. If they were able to turn around a t-shirt in less than 8 hours and get it to Chris Sale, that's damn impressive manufacturing. Yeah. And we need to analyze what they're doing as a company to improve our gross domestic product. But but gooning up the game, I didn't take it as like a sign from Ty Lue that they were being dirty.
It was a compliment. He wanted the Cavs to goon up the game, goon up the game like J.R. Smith shoving Al Horford.
No,
he
but wants like them be physical and
be
like
physical.
But it kind of
try every possession.
That Kevin Love quote speaks to like we basically just got our asses kicked, like not just in the scoreboard, but it's like physically through the entire game. Yeah. That's like what I think about. He's referring to. I don't like where do the Cavs develop enough heart to like fight back?
And I don't think it's just hard. I think,
but it's like physicality.
Part of it's athleticism. Part of it, I do think they got a lot of guys who aren't necessarily dogs. Like the Celtics, they're all dogs. Every one of them.
You have to be.
Every one of them's a dog. The Cavs, like Jeff Green, not a dog. Jordan Clarkson, not a dog. Rodney Hood,
definitely not a dog.
Not a dog. They don't have a lot of dogs, or they don't have all dogs at least. And I think that matters. I think more so it's just the athleticism difference. And the Celtics, like, 1 through 5, they're skilled. 1 through 5, almost all the time, unless Baines is out there, they're skilled. And when Baines is out there, they just have a different level
I think it's had a huge impact on the offensive end because I think the Celtics have been able to. I think part of its credit goes to Brad Stevens and part of it goes to just like the guys that they have, but they've been able to figure out a way to get buckets. And I think your article on theathletic.com, subscribe.
Shout out to The Athletic.
With Marcus Smart, like, just you showed in all the GIFs of just like the many different ways he was able to generate offense. He did a great job and had 9 assists. But I think the Celtics, if you want to go bully ball, if you want to slow it down, you want to attack switches, they can do that. And if you want to play, like, get a bunch of offense and do, like, get passes and things like that, the Celtics have a lot of versatility on offense that I think that I don't. This is a hot take. Hand up, hot take. Sun's coming out.
Sun is coming out. Feels nice.
But, like, without Kyrie Irving being in the offense, I think Kyrie is very ball dominant. And maybe him being out as a, I don't know. I'm backing away from the hot take. I couldn't even finish the take.
I was shaking my head at him while he was giving the take.
And I just looked at him and was like, fuck, that's a hot take.
No.
I feel like there's some validity to, like, they've had to learn how to score the basketball. They can't just, like,
they did have to learn it.
To Kyrie. Like, that was a lot of the offense of this year. It's just like, and all right, Kyrie, cook.
I think especially early on, that was the offense. I think later on in the season, with Kyrie, the Celtics were starting to evolve into that great offense. Like, if you look at the last 7 games he played, which are the 7 games after the All-Star break, they scored 119.6 points per 100 possessions with him on the court. Which is studly.
Must be researching that recently.
I did research that recently. Someone asked me a question about it, so I did research that. So I think they had evolved in that sense before Kyrie went down. And so this was an evolution. I think from the beginning, like Brad Stevens said, way back in training camp, before Hayward went down, before everything happened, Brad said, our defense is going to have to carry us because we just have so many new guys. There's not a lot of corporate knowledge. We're just going to take a while to gel offensively. And I think that was the case early on, and I think that was the case with Kyrie Irving, but I don't think it was necessarily due to Kyrie Irving. I think he was very amenable to passing the ball and playing within a system.
But with that being said, like, Kyrie going one-on-one is a very nice option to have in the playoffs, and
yeah, it is. But when you think, even,
but they don't have it right now. So I'm saying, like, they've had to do more to generate offense because of that.
But even when you look at it in the playoffs, some of their best offense in the Philly series was just basically like
bully ball
or running Tatum off a screen so that he could have basically an ISO situation.
They run the same play every single time, where it's like they throw a big, basically at the foul line, and then Tatum comes across. I thought the Cavs actually did a pretty good job of, like, mucking that up and not, like, Tatum didn't get it off, getting a clean release. But, yeah, it's just basically getting kind of like ISOs.
It's basically trying to get him in an ISO situation with a closeout. So it's not straight ISO, but it's still like, let's just put our talent out in space and see what happens.
But that's the thing. That's why the Cavs are dead. Like, who?
They're dead.
Who are they going to guard Jaylen Brown with?
They declared them dead.
Who are they going to guard Brown and Jaylen? You say LeBron? Well, then who are they going to guard Jason Tatum with? I feel like the Celtics have the ability to win those one-on-one matchups. Jaylen Brown played Kyle Korver off the court just because of his ability to post up. Like, they've been attacking those mismatches when the Cavs switch. They just very much feels like a matchup issue. Especially, like, they can put Smart in the post. They can put, when they go Smart at point guard, they can literally put any of those players in the post. So any small, and we saw the Cavs go with basically no point guard to try and kind of counter that and to match the size of the Celtics, and the Celtics still had, like, we're still able to score because you throw all those big guys out there, the Celtics are so much more athletic that they can drive, kick, get paint touches, and make, what, 2 passes, and you get a wide open 3 for, like, Mook.
And I think Al Horford is a huge part why they're so successful in that because, like, okay, game 1, Cleveland plays Kevin Love at center. Well, Boston takes advantage of him in the pick-and-pop situations. Cleveland decides we need Tristan Thompson in there. Then they go bigger. They can't generate as much offense. They don't have Kyle Korver in the starting lineup anymore. So they had to sacrifice a lot because Al Horford was destroying Kevin Love. And Al Horford, he can play big guys. He can play on the perimeter. Just his malleability has allowed them to do a lot of things. There aren't a lot of big guys, and
it's almost like he has value even without scoring points.
But you see it more and more later in the playoffs. Like, guys who have flaws get taken advantage of. And I think we saw it with Joel Embiid even. Joel Embiid is an awesome defender. Like, in most situations.
Finalist for Defensive Player of the Year.
In most situations, he lifts your team's defense so much. The Celtics picked on him.
They had to take him off Horford.
They had to hide him.
This is your Defensive of the Year finalist.
Horford can't get exposed like that because...
because he has no flaws.
Flawless. He is a flawless man. But really, it means a lot, especially in these days, and especially later in the playoffs against teams that can challenge you in so many ways. To have someone who can do everything well is huge. And Al Horford has always been able to do everything at least well. And now he's become a knockdown three-point shooter, which is just... open things up for him.
He actually wasn't in game two. He missed a bunch of his shots early.
This is true. Celtics missed a lot of shots early.
I don't understand. Like, thinking back on it, it felt like the Celtics were like not great in the first quarter, and LeBron had a quarter, like an amazing quarter, and
it was
all Jaylen. Where did this Jaylen Brown come from? Like, I just didn't expect him to be this much of a volume scorer, and it's a lot of it's in the like. His three-point shooting. Like, it didn't... I've been very much pleasantly surprised by the emergence of downtown Jaylen Brown, but I did not see this coming.
Kaizen.
Continual progress. He's a mental alpha. Jaylen Brown is, He's definitely read The Growth Mindset by Carol Dweck. Brad told me as much. But he is definitely all about the wild meditation he does. He just dominates and is just like... the confidence he has, and we learned from Marcus Smart recently that he talks a lot of shit, which I was shocked to hear, but loved hearing that fact that he calls guys little while posting them up. He said he calls someone little man. Like, that is gold.
I like that too. I usually say mouse in the house personally, but little guys, I like that too. But yeah, Jaylen, I mean, if you take away the games where he was struggling with his hamstring, he's just been stupid good this postseason. Like, he had a couple 30-point games against Milwaukee. He was fantastic throughout that series. And then
there was one point in game two where he knew he was the most athletic player on the court, and he was flying to the rim, and he got a layup, and then just the Cavs immediately called a timeout. I don't know if Jaylen was like just hyped or didn't realize that it was timeout, but he was sprinting back.
It was like the Sammy Sosa sprint to the outfield.
Exactly.
Remember that? I don't think you remember that. You're looking at me like you have no idea.
No, you said Sammy Sosa. I was thinking of all like the hand gestures he did and Sammy,
when they came out of the dugout, used to book it to.
Yo, that's some fake hustle right there.
Yeah, that is such fake hustle. What is the point of that? But shouts to Sammy.
Shouts to Sammy Sosa. Not looking great these days, but man, that home run chase was fun.
Great stroke. great long ball. Let's end it there, man. Your finger is really gross, by the way.
Yeah, I slammed in a car door like 6 weeks ago. It still looks terrible. I think it's part of my signature look now.
His fingernail is totally black. Like, it looks like Mr. Deeds' foot.
that's a pull right there. That's well done.
I had to give the Mr. Deeds a shout-out. Let's end it there. It's a beautiful night. Sam's going to the Red Sox game. He's going to enjoy.
What are you going to do tonight without any basketball?
That's a good
question. Let's talk a little bit before we end about the other series, because two of these teams could be the Celtics finals opponent, which is insane.
This is true.
The Rockets just blew the doors off the Warriors last night. I was a wee bit surprised by that.
Warriors in five.
You think it's just a gentleman's sweep? You think it's just as simple as that?
I think the Warriors are just the most talented team ever assembled. I think...
If
they play well, nobody touches them.
But they really didn't have anything going on offense last night.
They did not.
Other than Kevin Durant being the best player, best scorer.
And P.J. Tucker hit everything.
He was 8 of 9. P.J. Tucker was 8 of 9.
The floater he hit, little floater he hit over Draymond Green was when I started to realize P.J. Tucker was on one yesterday.
You want to play a wild, wild hypothetical?
Yeah.
Versus the Warriors, Celtics, finals. If it happens.
Warriors in five.
Yeah.
I
feel like the Celtics, because they are... The Celtics have played the Warriors pretty well over the past 3 years.
Yep, they have.
They try real hard. Yep. They're Kaizen. They're mental alphas.
This Celtics team is a lot better than...
Yeah.
I think people are even admitting now.
That's the thing, is that the Celtics don't get... That's why, like, predictions are kind of absurd. It's just, like, Celtics are outperforming expectations, but of just, like, what the general zeitgeist assumed they were going to do.
The zeitgeist.
Ooh, yeah, pulled that one out. But, like, they're a very talented team, even without Kyrie Irving. Like, I'm not too shocked by them, like, being the Cavaliers. A number of people have, like, Jeff Van Gundy specifically said in Game 1 that, like, the Celtics are the favorite over the Cavs. They're not... I mean, clearly the Warriors are the best team ever assembled. I'm just saying, like, basketball is basketball. Crazier things have happened. Same. Predictions are stupid to me. Like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Warriors in 5.
Celtics in 7. Celtics in 4.
Kaizen.
Kaizen.
Kaizen. Let's end it there. Let's end it with a good Kaizen shout-out. The Celtics in 4 finals prediction. And... anybody who doesn't typically listen to this show,
you're stupid.
But if you want to, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. We are the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast, the greatest Celtics podcast ever created.
I was thinking about this the other day, like, we're pretty legit. Like, we turn out some great content on a daily basis.
I was thinking about it. I was pretty legit.
I was actually like, yo, we're nice. Like, we're entertaining as fuck. And we do it 5 days a week. That's
facts.
Dope.
Facts.
That's good fucking breakfast right there.
Hashtag facts. Hashtag facts. All right. That's it for this episode of Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.